Brittany Luce, and welcome back to Sampler, the show where we play you handpicked moments from podcasts you just have to hear. I hope you're ready to get freaked out, because this week we are going to hear some scary stuff. So just so you know, when I get scared, I get a bit of a potty mouth, and we're going to be playing some really freaky stuff. So if you've got young kids in your midst, now is the time to send them out of the room or to save this episode for later. So I challenged my senior producer to bring me some scary, suspenseful podcast moments, and we're going to hear those later in the show. But first, we are going to take a look back at the suspenseful audio of yesteryear. Today's story actually begins in 2015 with me. The date was Friday, August 7th, and I had just been offered a job, this job, here at Gimlet. I could finally step down from my title of world's worst marketing manager and do something I really enjoyed, and I was thrilled. So I did what any sensible 20-something would do to celebrate a life-changing job offer. I went out at 6 p.m., I had one drink, and I dipped out early to watch 4 episodes of The Twilight Zone on Netflix. I've been kind of obsessed with The Twilight Zone since I was 11 years old, and I've seen just about every episode, or at least I thought I had. That night, I happened upon an episode that, despite my intense fandom, I had never seen before. So, something to know about me, I suffer from whatever type of narcissism makes a person think that a Twilight Zone twist awaits just around every corner. So, like, if a doll started speaking to me, or if everyone in my life sprouted pig snouts overnight, I would be the very last person surprised by any of it. And that mild paranoia is actually what makes watching The Twilight Zone so much fun for me. But that night, watching this episode I'd never seen before, I really had the feeling this one was actually about me. It was about a woman named Nan, who was, like me, 27 years old, and, like me, lived in New York. She was an independent young lady with a fancy pants job, just like the one I was about to start. Nan was on a cross-country drive from New York to California, and I don't want to give anything away, but things don't turn out exactly great for her. I loved watching that episode, but still it felt like a bad omen, casting a dark shadow over my recent good news. So, okay, let's flash forward to months later. I was sifting through clips for Sampler, and I realized that the story of Nan from that episode of The Twilight Zone had found me yet again, this time in audio form. And I'm going to play that audio for you now in a new segment we're calling From the Archives. In this segment, we'll share audio from the past, things that might not have originated in the podcasting world, but are finding new lives there. Today's feature is from a podcast called Orson Welles on the Air. It's one of a number of podcasts that bring old-time radio dramas to modern audiences. Orson Welles. Most people know him for Citizen Kane, the movie, and War of the Worlds, the radio play that everyone thought was real. But in the 1930s and 40s, he did many, many radio plays, including the one you're about to hear. We're going to play you an abridged version. It's called The Hitchhiker, written by Lucille Fletcher. Years later, it was adapted for that very same Twilight Zone episode. Oh, but one notable difference. The main character in the TV version was a woman named Nan, but the radio version's protagonist was a guy named Ronald.
My name is Ronald Adams. I'm 36 years of age, unmarried, tall, dark, with a black mustache. I drive a 1940 Buick, license number 6Y175189. I was born in Brooklyn. All this I know. I know that I'm at this moment perfectly sane. That it's not me who's gone mad. It's something else. Something utterly beyond my control.
Okay, so I know it's old-timey, but trust me, this guy is good. You start listening, and you're hooked. So Ronald proceeds to tell his story. It begins 6 days prior, as he's about to head out on a cross-country drive from New York to California. His mother, naturally, is worried about the long journey.
Ronald, I wish you weren't driving.
Oh, Mother, there you go again. People do it every day.
I know, but you'll be careful, won't you? Promise me you'll be extra careful. Don't fall asleep or drive fast or pick up any strangers on the road.
Oh, gosh. I think I was still 17 to hear you talk.
His mother was right to worry about strangers on the road. Pretty soon, Ronald has his first encounter with the hitchhiker.
Crossing Brooklyn Bridge that morning in the rain, I saw a man leaning against the cables. He seemed to be waiting for a lift. There were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. He was carrying a cheap overnight bag in one hand. He was thin, nondescript, with a cap pulled down over his eyes. I would have forgotten him completely, except that just an hour later, while crossing the Pulaski Skyway over the Jersey Flats, I saw him again. At least, he looked like the same person. He was standing now with one thumb pointing west. I couldn't figure out how he'd got there, but I thought probably one of those fast trucks had picked him up, beaten me to the Skyway, and let him off. I didn't stop for him. Then late that night, I saw him again. It's on the New Pennsylvania Turnpike between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh. It's 265 miles long with a very high speed limit. I was just slowing down for one of the tunnels when I saw him, standing under an arc light by the side of the road. I'd seen quite distinctly the bag, the cap, even the spots of fresh rain spattered over his shoulders. He hallooed at me this time.
Hello! Hello!
I stepped on the gas like a shot. That's lonely country through the Alleghenies, and I had no intention of stopping. Besides, the coincidences, or whatever it was, neither the Willies.
Shaken up, Ronald pulls into a gas station where he starts to make small talk with the attendant.
What about hitchhikers?
Hitchhikers here?
What's the matter? Don't you ever see any?
Not much. If we did, it'd be a sight for sore eyes.
Why?
Oh, a guy'd be a fool who started out to hitch rides on this road. Look at it.
Then, you've never seen anybody?
Nope. Maybe they get the lift before the turnpike starts. I mean, you know, just before the toll house. But then it'd be a mighty long ride. Most cars wouldn't want to pick up a guy for that long a ride. And you know, this is pretty lonesome country here. Mountains and woods. You ain't seen anybody like that, have you?
No. Oh, no, not at all. I was just a technical question.
With that information from the gas station attendant, Ronald decides to forget about the hitchhiker and spends the night in Pittsburgh. After he wakes up, refreshed and with his head on straight, he hits the road. But at a stop on the road, he sees the hitchhiker walking toward him.
Hello! Hello! Hello!
No, not just now, sorry.
Going to California?
No, not today. The other way, going to New York, sorry. After I got the car back on the road again, I felt like a fool. Yet the thought of picking him up, of having him sit beside me, was somehow unbearable. At the same time, I felt more than ever unspeakably alone.
Caught between a rock and a hard place, Ronald makes a decision.
I knew I'd see him again. Maybe at the next turn of the road. I knew that when I saw him next, I would run him down.
Desperate for some company and some sense of normalcy, Ronald picks up a woman hitchhiking on the side of the road. She tries flirting with him a bit, but her designs on romance are soon interrupted.
Hey, look out!
Did you see
who?
Ronald sees the hitchhiker and tries to run him over, which naturally freaks out his female passenger. Especially since Ronald seems to be the only one who can see the hitchhiker.
There! Look there!
Door work. I'm getting out of here.
See him that time?
No, I didn't see him that time. And personally, mister, I don't expect never to see him. All I want to do is go on living. I don't see how I will very long, driving with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me, but please don't go.
So if you'll excuse me.
You can't go. Listen, how would you like to go to California? I'll drive you to California.
Seeing pink elephants all the way? No, thanks. Thanks just the same.
Listen, please, just 1 minute, please.
You know what I think you need, big boy? Not a girlfriend. Just a good dose of sleep.
Please.
There. I got it now.
No, you can't go. Please.
Leave
come
your
back.
Hands off me. Do you hear? Leave your hands off me.
She runs away. And Ronald is alone once again. Well, except for the ever-increasing appearance of the hitchhiker.
For now, he began to be everywhere. Wherever I stopped, even for a moment, for gas, for oil, for a drink of pop, a cup of coffee, sandwich, he was there.
Ronald is desperate. He can't escape this hitchhiker. He's reached his wit's end. And then in New Mexico, he stops to use a payphone and, well, I'm just going to let Ronald take it from here.
I had the feeling that if only I could speak to someone familiar, someone I loved, I could pull myself together.
Your call, please.
Long distance.
Long distance, certainly. This is long distance.
I'd like to put in a call to my home in Brooklyn, New York. I'm Ronald Adams. The number is Beechwood 200828.
Certainly. I will try to get it for you. Albuquerque. New York for Gallup.
New York.
Gallup, New Mexico, calling Beechwood 200828.
I read somewhere that love could banish demons. It's the middle of the morning. I knew Mother would be home. I pictured her tall and white-haired in her crisp house dress, going about her tasks. Be enough, I thought, just to hear the even calmness of her voice.
Will you please deposit $3.85 for the first 3 minutes? When you have deposited $1.50, will you wait until I have collected the money? All right, deposit another $1.50. Will you please deposit the remaining 85 cents? Ready with Brooklyn. Go ahead, please.
Hello? Hello?
Mrs. Adams' residence.
Hello? Hello, Mother?
This is Mrs. Adams' residence. Who is it you wish to speak to, please?
What? Who's this?
This is Mrs. Winnie.
Mrs. Winnie? I don't know any Mrs. Winnie. Oh, where's my mother? Where's Mrs. Adams?
Mrs. Adams is not at home. She's still in the hospital.
The hospital?
Yes. Who is this calling, please? Is it a member of the family?
Well, what's she in the hospital for?
She's been prostrated for 5 days. Nervous breakdown. But who is this
nervous
calling?
Nervous breakdown? Well, my mother never was nervous.
It's all taken place since the death of her oldest son, Ronald.
Death of her oldest son, Ronald. Hey, what's this? What number is this?
This is Beechwood 20828. It's all been very sudden. He was killed just 6 days ago in an automobile accident on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir.
What an ending, am I right? The exact same thing happened to Nan from the Twilight Zone, which is why I'm probably going to hold off on any cross-country solo drives for possibly the rest of my life, especially any that require crossing the Brooklyn Bridge. And that brings me to an awesome thing about podcasts. It was scary when I saw this play out on television, sure, but something about Orson Welles bellowing took my mind to a place where the terror I imagined for Ronald was far worse than anything I'd seen on screen. It was a much more menacing experience, and in this case, that made it all the more fun. The magic of audio narratives is that they still leave a bit to the imagination, which I think Twilight Zone creator Rod Serling would say is a much more horrifying place than anywhere in reality I can think of. Are you on the edge of your seat? I know I am, because up next, my producer is about to come in here and freak me out. Welcome back to Sampler. So, some people around here thought it would be fun for me to get scared on mic. So, my senior producer, Sarah Abdurrahman, found a couple suspenseful moments from modern-day podcasts to play for me today.
Hey, Brittany.
Hi, Sarah.
You seem nervous. I thought you liked scary stuff.
I like scary movies. I don't like gory ones because I just think it's unnecessary, but I love feeling like the stress fear, like stalkers, serial killers, murderers, people coming in your house, like all that sort of stuff. My greatest fears, I love watching.
Do you get really into it? Are you like heart pounding?
Yeah, like, I'm like crazy. I look at everything through my fingers.
Do
like,
you really?
I really
I always
do.
Wondered who actually does that.
It's me. I'm always just like, oh my God, the stress. Mm. But I love it.
Do you listen to a lot of suspenseful stories in audio form?
Sometimes I do. I'm a big fan of Limetown.
Mm-hmm.
Limetown is like this serialized, scripted, like really old-timey, almost it feels like an old-time radio, like radio play, like radio drama that's about like the investigation of this like entire city of people that just like disappeared. And the first time I heard it, I was getting my hair braided, which for those of you who have never done this, or if you don't know anyone who's ever done it before, it is an excruciatingly painful experience that takes like hours. It takes like 6 hours. And so I'm sitting in this braid shop that's playing these like terrible Nigerian movies in the background. And like, I turned on the first episode of Limetown and I was just like, this is so crazy.
There are others who've died. So many others. What happened? Before the panic started, I left the town. I walked right out. I don't know why. We were sleeping, and then I was not sleeping. Then I was walking away. The next day was the panic. He kept me safe, and I don't know why. I haven't been able to find anyone since. I tried to listen, but it's so quiet.
I was completely transported. Like, I was with the investigative reporter in the city, like, talking to people. I was told, it was like my brain filled in, like, everything that I couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's creepy.
It's very intimate.
I think it makes it so that you have to, like, you have to be more intentional when, like, absorbing the information. So it's like you have to listen harder. You're listening for recognizable noises. You're listening to hear footsteps. Like, a pause. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, a pause is, like, the scariest thing when listening to something like this. We're like, there's no one talking, there's no one breathing, there's no one moving. It's sort of just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. You have less information to go off of. It makes like what you do get so much more precious.
Well, so I had this challenge
mm-hmm.
to try to really make you feel some suspense today.
God.
So get ready to be anxious.
I'm always ready to be anxious. Wake up ready to be anxious.
So the first clip I'm going to play for you
okay.
is from a podcast called The Truth. Their tagline is that they make movies for your ears. So they're really good at like
ooh.
Layering all that sound and like getting you that feeling that mm-hmm. you mentioned of like being there, that intimate feeling. So they do stories like sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're sad, sometimes they're scary. So the one I'm going to play for you today is called Don't Touch a Thing. It's written by Lewis Cornfield, and it's about this woman named Tina. What you need to know is that Tina and her husband are visiting her mom in the hospital.
Why are you doing this to me?
What am I doing to you?
Dragging strangers into my business.
Okay, Larry's not a stranger. He's my husband. He's been my husband for a decade.
We met at your Aunt Marie's 100th birthday.
Yeah, I know about husbands. I don't want him here.
Well, that's too bad.
I want to go home.
Larry has generously offered for you to come move in with us in Cleveland.
We both want you to.
So, how about it?
I want to go home.
Well, that's not happening.
Do you realize how bad your house is?
The paramedic said it was unfit for human life.
I want to go home. My home.
Well, okay.
We can help you go through your things, though, and we can salvage within reason.
Over my dead body! Vultures, thieves, you don't know anything about it. You're not sensitive. Don't you touch a thing. Don't you touch any of my... Nurse. Nurse. Not a thing. Don't touch a thing. Get out of my room. Don't touch a thing.
I'm like sitting here like pregnant with anticipation like, and what?
Do you want more?
Yes.
All right. So we hear the main character and her husband driving at this point, and you get a little bit of background. Tina obviously has a fraught relationship with her mother, and you hear a little bit about her father, who she feels like she should be mad at because he left years and years ago, but at the same time, she kind of understands why he would leave because of the crazy situation she grew up in. In this next clip, you will hear some flashbacks, but first we're going to pick up when they get to the mother's house.
Oh, they're going to go to her house? It's a terrible idea. That's such a bad idea. I wouldn't do that.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Oh, this isn't bad.
Just wait till we get inside. Oh, watch your step. All right, you ready? Scare away the rats.
Oh my God, the smell.
That's rotten food or rotting meat.
First thing you gotta do is get rid of it then, okay?
This is, I don't know where to start. Watch out for the cats! It's a nightmare. Is this a nightmare or is this real?
Was this how it was when you were growing up?
This is even worse than I remembered.
Mom, hello, are you hearing me? Do you think this animal looks healthy?
I'm nursing them.
You're killing them, you psycho.
What's going on?
What do you care? Go back upstairs and play with your toys.
Tina, that's not nice.
Have you looked in the freezer, Dad? There are dead cats in the freezer.
I'm gonna bury them.
This is psychotic behavior.
Tina,
this is.
Please. Look at how she's talking to me, Joe. Does that sound familiar to you? Huh?
Tina, your mother is going to be burying them. She's just has a hard time letting go. She's grieving. You have to respect
this
that.
This is your response? This is how you're going to... You guys are both animals!
That's you nice. Little bitch!
Girls.
Hey, what about this chair? It's
garbage.
If you cleaned it up, it'd look nice.
It's garbage.
Garbage. So it's all garbage.
I don't know. Maybe we could keep the Magna box.
Hey, we got a keeper pile.
I don't even know if it works.
Yeah, let me try to turn it on.
I've only been invited into the laboratory three times. Each time I came out with a potential fortune.
Tina, honey?
What?
The fly's on channel 25 downstairs. What are you doing?
Hacking.
Where are you going?
Away from here. Anywhere.
This late at night?
Dad, what does it matter?
Tina, I know that your mom can be a little difficult. But she's very sensitive inside.
Sensitive?
She feels so much that she doesn't know how to cope with it. And if you just can respect that and sort of stay out of her
she's
way,
she's out
think...
of control. Why do you let her get away with it? You let her walk all over you.
That's not nice.
Well, it's true.
I had my moments where I thought about what life would be like if I just...
You should leave. I'm leaving. You should leave, too.
Do me a favor. Just sleep on it. Just tonight?
I don't want to...
Come on. Come downstairs.
Dad, I...
Honey, let's go watch the fly.
I'm counting on you not to lose your nerve, for only you can help me. I've had a serious accident... I'm not in danger at the moment, although it's a matter of life or death.
Hey, Tina! Tina!
Yeah?
Get to check this out.
What do you want?
Check this out. Huh. These are vintage copies of Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Oh,
look,
weird.
You got The Mummy. You got Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
This is classic. Mom's got great stuff up here.
This is all my dad's stuff. She would never even come up here.
I knew some people would be very interested in all this.
Have you spoken to your father?
No, Mom, I haven't.
When he calls you, tell him I don't want him here anymore. He's not welcome back.
Wait, what are you talking about?
He left.
What?
How about that?
What do you mean he left?
I mean he left. He just walked out.
Check out this mannequin.
That's your father for you, Tina. Your best friend. What do you think? Is that a man?
This is like an authentic movie prop. It's like a corpse from a Mario Bava movie. So real. This is amazing. What's this?
I know that sweater on that mannequin. I know that sweater.
Spook along with Zach, really awesome.
No, honey. I know that sweater. I know that. That isn't a mannequin.
When he was like, oh, this looks like a real prop from a film, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, you caught on to that really quickly.
Oh my
and you
God.
Freaked out when you figured it out.
I did, because I was just like, this is some real crazy shit. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's sad too, because like, she really loved her dad.
Your best friend. This is your dad, some type of guy.
I'm like, oh my God. And this whole time, he didn't even leave her, even though she was a crazy hoarder.
Yeah.
He stayed with her. Well, I mean, he stayed with her. Forever.
Forever.
And as soon as they walked in, I was like, it's a dead body. They walked in, he's like, oh, it smells like cats in here. And I was just like, you guys.
I love that you, like, I felt like I was in that. Like, I could imagine that house. It was like I was stepping on those soda cans
yeah.
and, like, papers. Oh. And, like, you could just, like, smell it.
Yeah, the buy-in is like, I mean, I'm sold. Like, literally, like, from jump, I was like, oh my God. I just love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's next? What's next?
All right, so.
Oh no.
This one that's tailor-made for you, Brittany. It's from a show called The No Sleep Podcast.
No, my God. This already sounds scary.
Well, yeah, it's trying to keep you up at night.
I'm scared already thinking about me not sleeping later.
So the people who make this podcast call it a horror fiction podcast that's not for the faint of heart.
Oh God, I'm probably faint of heart.
So each episode has like, you know, half a dozen stories that they tell. And this particular one is called Morning Mail.
Ugh.
Don't you like getting packages?
I get all my packages delivered to
yeah,
Gimlet.
We share a desk space. Sometimes they're on my desk. I know you get all your packages delivered to Gimlet. Which is why I know that this story will speak to you directly. So this story is written by Karen Torrey. It starts off with this woman going out to get her morning mail.
Uh-huh.
And she notices a package on her doorstep.
I didn't think anything of it, really. I shop online all the time, and though I didn't recognize the return address, I thought it was probably something I'd ordered. After tearing through the brown paper, the first thing I noticed was that the box was an Adidas shoebox. I love Adidas. They are my favorite shoes, and I've been wearing them since I was 10 years old. Maybe my husband ordered these for me as a gift. What an awesome guy. Anyway, with the thought new shoes running through my brain, obscuring all other thoughts, I wasted no time pulling off the top of the box. And guess what? Yay, shoes! But I quickly realized these were not new shoes. Now, they didn't look ratty or worn. They were in fantastic condition, in fact. Supple, dark red suede, still soft to the touch. The sides of the soles, the Achilles protector in back, and the three leather stripes on both sides, still super bright white. They were classic Adidas Gazelles. Really awesome, I thought. And it's no wonder I like them so much. because the shoes that I had just got in the mail, they were my old shoes. I bought these shoes brand new 15 years ago when I was a junior in high school, using the money from my first real paycheck. They cost half my 2-week take-home pay, and that was one of the reasons I was so completely bummed when I lost them at St. Joseph's Hospital a week later.
So here she recalls how she lost her shoes. It was after work one night. She was taking a shortcut home through a park.
It was almost always deserted there after dark. I had no reason to think I would run into anybody on my way home that night. About halfway through the park, just as I began to cross through the middle where the little kids' playground was, I noticed somebody sitting on one of the swings looking in my direction. I assume it was a he, honestly, though I'm not totally sure, was dressed all in black, wearing a black knit cap with a full face mask, black gloves, and black shoes. He swayed slightly. He sat in on the little rubber seat, hands at his side, sort of hunched over and leaning on the left side chain. He seemed to be looking straight ahead. I knew he could see me from there. It was really creepy. Since I was in the middle of the park at this point, no other way out would have been quicker than to just keep on going on my normal path. I kind of went wide, trying to avoid walking near to the playground without looking like I was trying to avoid walking near the playground, but I hurried. My mind was racing with all the possibilities of who that person could be, how they were going to kill me, what they would do with my body. I was almost fully past the playground. I could just start to see the neighborhood streetlights over the little hill, and I threw a quick glance over to the stranger. He didn't seem to be looking at me at all. His line of sight hadn't changed. I felt relieved, but only for a second. And then I heard the unexpectedly loud sound of the rattle of the chains on the swing, which caused me to jerk my head over in time to see him leap up from the seat. In what seemed like a millisecond and with full force, he was running directly at me. I took off. I never considered myself a fast runner, but I swear at that moment I was flying. I wasn't sure how close he was, but I could hear clearly the pounding of his footsteps behind me and his loud, heavy breathing. It sounded like a growl, vicious, almost inhuman. I heard him making a grunting noise, and I felt his hand wrap around my hair.
Ugh, it's like my stomach was in my butt. Like, I felt so terrible. First of all, personally, I would not have passed through this park in the middle of the night. I don't do that. It's nothing that I do. I will always take the long route. And like,
well, yeah, people in scary stories aren't supposed to make smart decisions.
And that's the thing. That's actually
why they run upstairs when there's a murderer running after them.
Yeah, they're like, I'm going to go into the part of my house with no exit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what a great plan. Another like central strain of joy for me watching like suspenseful stuff is like, being like, these people are so stupid.
Are
like,
you,
these people.
Are you blaming the victim, Brittany?
I mean, on one level, like, they don't know. Like, they don't know that they're in this story, in this podcast. But on another level, it's just some of the same. I'm just sort of like, you guys, like, you have to know some things. I'm wearing Adidas right now. And you will recall when you first started working here, I ordered some Sambas online because I always wanted those shoes when I was a little kid. And my mom said no. And I was like, I'm grown. I can get my own sneakers. I can do whatever I want. But like, if I opened a box and I saw that it was an Adidas, especially Adidas original box, and I opened it up and I saw some Gazelles inside, I would be like, oh, great. But like, yeah, I mean, I'd freak out. Obviously, if I saw that they were my shoes that I bought 15 years ago, like, and lost them. She said she lost them in the hospital.
Yes. Do you want to know how?
Yes.
Okay. So she keeps running.
Uh-huh.
She gets hit by a car.
Holy shit. And then she ends up in the
hospital. She ends up in the
well,
hospital.
It's better for her to get hit by a car than get caught up with that guy.
Well, is it? Because her sneakers go missing. And that's, you know, how they reappear to her this many years later.
Oh, my God. This person found her.
She reaches inside the sneaker.
Oh, my God, Sarah.
She finds a note.
Oh, my God. What does the note say?
6 words only. Harmless words in and of themselves. But knowing who wrote them, wondering how he got my shoes that night, understanding that he's kept them for 15 years tucked away somewhere, trying to figure out how he knows where I live now and for how long he's known, imagining what on earth he could be planning and where and when. The note read, "You are going to need these."
And that's it.
It's like my blood pressure is up.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry, Brittany. Thanks for sitting through this.
No, this is good. Like, I like this feeling. I just like being creeped out.
Why do you think it, like, simultaneously feels so good and feels so bad?
You get to be close to this thing that is terrible, but you're really curious about without having to actually bear any of the consequences. Like, there's, like, a relief in that, I think, that like, is satisfying or that people find enjoyable.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
I don't know. Why do people do anything? People like jumping out of planes. People like bungee jumping. I think it goes without saying that, like, I don't believe in those types of activities. But people like to push limits. I'm not necessarily one of them, but people like to push limits.
I mean, you are one of them because you like to push limits in terms of the things you consume.
Yeah, I mean, I like to push limits from the safety of my bed.
So, like, listening to suspenseful podcasts is, like, the safest way to be a daredevil.
Yes, consuming stressful media is like, this is me walking on the wild side. I don't need to experience suspense in real life. Like, I hate that shit. I like to be at home, safe, drinking water, my door's locked.
But what these stories tell you, Brittany, is that you are never safe.
Why would you say that to me? Oh, God, I just thought about the woman again. Oh, with her dad's corpse. Oh. Oh. Yeah. So today you heard The Tale of the Hitchhiker from Orson Welles on the air. You heard a bone-chilling snippet of Limetown. Our hoarder haunted house came from The Truth. And The Reason I Will Never Buy Adidas Gazelles was brought to you by the No Sleep Podcast. This episode was produced by Rose Reed, Sarah Abdurrahman, Chris Neary, Caitlin Kenny, Matthew Nelson, and myself. It was edited by Annie Rose Strasser and Alex Bloomberg. Our theme music was made by Mike Avellian, and our ad music was made by Mark Phillips. Additional music in the show was composed by Kobe Bienert. The show was mixed by Austin Thompson, with music production by Matthew Boll. Sampler is a production of Gimlet Media.